Hello, everyone. Welcome to Next Question with Katie Couric. I, as I'm sure you've gathered, am not Katie Couric. I'm Allison Roman. I'm a New York-based cook, writer. Maybe you're familiar with some of my cookbooks. One of them is called Dining In. One of them is called Nothing Fancy. I've got a newsletter, not so cleverly called a newsletter. Or maybe you've seen my home movies on YouTube. Hello.
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 Good morning.
Welcome to Home Movies. I'm Allison Roman.
And today I am making...
Today I'm making
pasta salad,
cinnamon rolls,
matzo brei,
potato leek soup,
a sticky apple cake,
shrimp scampi,
shallot pasta.
But today I'm stepping in for Katie while she takes a quick break for her book tour. And today we'll be making... No, just kidding. Today we will be doing something totally different.
Wait, Allison, how long are you doing this? This is so great.
This is it. This is the only one. You're my one guest.
No.
Yeah, really.
Am I really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I'm only doing the one and this is it.
I'm so honored.
Today I'm talking to Jillian Laub. Jillian is a photographer and a filmmaker, and I've been following her work for a while now. She's mostly known for making extremely gorgeous portraits of very famous people, musicians, politicians, actors. But she's also a really thoughtful photojournalistic essay maker. She does political conflict, racial tensions, marginalized communities. She really dives deep into these lesser talked about, lesser seen communities and people. I first came across Jillian and her work around, I think it was 2017. It was a live event where she was showing some of her newer photographs and explaining them in front of a live audience, how they made her feel, why they were important to her. You know, on stage in front of a ton of people. And I was very moved by her performance. This was part of a larger show called Pop-Up Magazine, which, as indicates, is a live magazine created just for the stage.
So I love that that was your first time you kind
yeah.
of knew. I love that because that was such an important moment for me and such a turning point.
The photographs she was showing then were of her super close family who were recently... let's say, divided by politics. 4 years later, that project is now a gorgeous book and collection and exhibit at the ICP in New York called Family Matters. I chatted with Jillian over Zoom just before the Thanksgiving break, and here's our conversation. Before we get started, I want to hear a little bit more about your background, where you come from, how this came to be, because I feel like the journey you started on, you weren't like, I'm going to photograph my family as this long-term right. project. It was sort of like woven into what you had already been doing.
Yeah. So it has been over 20 years. The book is over 20 years of work. So it didn't start out as the intention was never like, this is going to be a project. I just started photographing my family. And I think I describe it in the book in the beginning. You know, it began really, I was an art student in New York, and I was one of the only Americans in my program, oddly. It was at the International Center of Photography. And there was this moment, you know, I'd always been interested in photographing other people. I'm such a curious person. So my work was really centered around, you know, learning about other people, telling other stories. I never thought of myself or my family as a subject. But then something happened when I was a student where I was outside taking a cigarette break with a bunch of my classmates, and a classmate of mine from Scandinavia was doing a project on capitalism, and he pointed to these women across the street and he said, "Oh, look at those women in their vulgar fancy fur coats." And I was like, oh, yeah, oh, goodness. And he was like, I don't understand these fur coats, because at the time, the school was on the Upper East Side. And as they came closer, my heart started racing because the realization struck that it was my mom, my aunt, and my grandma coming
towards
us.
I know those people. Yeah, not only do I know them, but I come from there.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was just that moment where kind of my worlds collided. And so that's really kind of where it started. And that's when I just started photographing my family for myself. And then it just kept growing. And it was just something I did. But it's not anything that I had intended to be a project until, the past 4 years, it became very apparent that actually the narrative is unfolding to me.
What were you doing in the interim? So you had been documenting your family, you know, since then as an ongoing project, but what was sort of the thing that you focused on?
So basically, you know, when I came out of school, I started, I just did portfolio drop-offs, and the best photography in magazines was at the New York Times Magazine. And I dropped my portfolio off there, and I got a cover story right away, and I started having work and shows. But I really, after September 11th, I was put on assignment during September 11th to photograph people who had lost people in the towers. And I realized the power of the exchange of photographer and subject, and how it's a real, it's something is happening when you're making a portrait of another person. And it was that moment where people were in mourning and we didn't know each other. And it was this really powerful exchange that happened. And it was like the photograph was their moment to say, like, we're not just a number. Like, look at us. Look at our loved one. Look at who we lost. And it was about 3 to 4 weeks of photographing a lot of families. And something happened where I just said, I need to work on a project that, because it was 2 years of just assignment, that I really wanted to make for myself that I was interested in. So I started working in the Middle East. And for the next 5 years, I was really working on this project called Testimony with Israeli Jews, Israeli Arabs, and Palestinians, kind of how they were affected by the second Intifada. And then I learned about this town in Georgia where they were having segregated proms. So it started out as an assignment and then continued for the next 10 to 12 years as I tried to understand the roots of how this town had segregated proms up until 2010. And then there was a racially charged murder. So I was really deep into other stories. And every time that I would come home, it just photographing my family was something I did. It's not really something I thought about.
So the first time I heard of you actually was that I went to go see a pop-up magazine live performance in New York. And this was in, I want to say 2017. Does that sound right?
It was 2017, yeah.
Okay, so it was definitely post-2016. And I know this because your whole presentation was effectively on photographing your family, which we'll get into detail on sort of why they're interesting to begin with, because that's obviously what makes the book so great. But what about doing this talk in 2017, like, inspired you to say, like, okay, I have something here? Because I feel like that may have been a turning point of realizing that, okay, beyond just my family, which we all have one, and obviously they're very colorful people who demonstrate their personality in one image, which not everybody can do. Lots of leopard print, lots of diamonds, lots of fur, lots of lipstick. I love it all. The hair is incredible. But yeah, so tell me about like that process and your storytelling there and how that maybe led to this project.
Pop-Up had approached me. I'd been talking in conversation with them for years and figuring out what story would be right. And they actually called me in January 2017, and they caught me at this moment where I was in real crisis. First of all, I had just given birth a couple of months before to my second daughter. And I was definitely having postpartum. And also, it was postpartum mixed with my family's love for Trump all of a sudden, simultaneously at the same exact time.
Yeah.
So in January...
That's got to be interesting. So what do you mean all of a sudden? Was it like prior to that you didn't quite understand like the political implications of their politics, or
well,
it just didn't
seem?
Well,
no, I knew that they were fiscally conservative, but
okay.
But they had also, you know, my dad was a huge fan of Bill Clinton, so, and they kind of pride themselves on being independent voters. So this kind of like real fervent love of Trump was something that threw me, and the maligning of Hillary Clinton was something that just threw me for such a loop and such an existential crisis that it's hard to really describe. But I do I do remember specifically when I learned about it and how I learned about it, because that will never leave me. And I didn't take it seriously until I realized it was serious. But it was amazing because Pop-Up had, I just wanted to, because it is kind of a great story, how they had called and they said, you know, I remember these pictures of your family. Do you have any stories about your family you want to share? And I'm like, this is not a good time. And I'm friendly with the producer, so I felt like I could be honest, you know, off the record. And I said, look, I just came back. I was photographing the Women's March, and my parents, to give you the short end of the story, my parents were there in D.C. the same time I was there, but they were there for the inauguration.
And wow. Unreal.
Immediately, you know, she was like, okay, I understand this is hard, but can you just give me the chance to tell you why making this story and sharing the story would be important? And the thing about Pop-Up is that it's a, you can't record it. There's no, if you're not in the audience, it didn't exist.
Right.
So that's a really, really safe place to share material. When I did that, I realized how my story was not just my story, because so many people reached out to me. Besides it being the most cathartic, you know, experience of writing this painful, about this painful time and kind of putting it all together, so many people reached out to me who were in the audience and said, oh my goodness, this is happening to me as well. Like, thank you so much for sharing this. Because I don't think people were talking about this. You know, it was like so shameful at the time.
Right.
So it was just, it was then that kind of bells went off like, oh my goodness, this is resonating with other people. And it's not about my family. It's about what they're going through as well with their family.
If you look through the book even, or have seen any of your past work of your family, it's very clear that these people live out loud. Like they seem to be the type of person when you meet and you say, wow, that person is 1,000% themselves, 1,000,000% of the time. They speak their mind. You can tell from the image. They are, you know, full of joie de vivre, if you will.
Yep.
But I imagine that that also translates to a very loud sort of trumpeting of their political beliefs. So, you know, I think it's the holidays and we all are coming to terms with the fact that politics have been an intense subject for the past few years, especially. But a lot of people, you know, sort of abide by the, like, we don't talk about it. It's like not something we bring up. I imagine that wasn't really an option for you.
That wasn't an option, which is why I also thought reproducing the text messages in the book and the exhibition were very important, because that's how we tend to communicate with people now. And it got toxic. It got so toxic. And a lot of my 5 years was dictated, my mental state was dictated by our family text chain. And that's why I included that. But I, you know, it's interesting. We're going into Thanksgiving right now, and that's always such the marker for me. I've photographed my family's Thanksgivings for decades. And in 2016, it was really a question whether we were going to go.
Oh, wow.
And we went. And then you see in the book the photograph where I just took a – I didn't take any other pictures really except my parents in their aprons in the kitchen and then the photograph of my place seating. Which had all Trump Pence paraphernalia all around it. So it was like they thought it was funny.
Right. Of course. Yeah. I mean, they thought it was funny in that because they knew that it would get a rise out of you specifically, or are there other people present that you sort of feel like you have an ally at the table, or when you're there, is it very much you as an outsider?
My husband was my ally.
And that's good.
And we have a large family, and I think we were outliers in that room, and it felt like we were visiting a bit of a cult.
Yeah.
So anyway, when I, you know, all of the past four Thanksgivings, you know, when I think back to last Thanksgiving, COVID Thanksgiving, it was right before the election, and it was a very emotional Thanksgiving. So I'm hoping that this Thanksgiving will be less heavy.
We'll be right back with Jillian Laub and me, Allison Roman, after a quick break. Hi again, it's Allison Roman standing in for Katie Couric. I'm talking with the photographer Jillian Laub about her book and exhibit, Family Matters. We're about to dive into one of the details and makings of some of the photographs, like one of my favorite photos, which is called The Wedding Planner. Is that your wedding planner?
Yes.
Okay, so this I don't know where this photo is taken, but there are the right number of wine glasses on the table, which is to say 400. And this woman is looking into the camera, and your parents, I believe, are looking at her. She's sitting in the middle, and she is, I mean.
She's a legend.
I must know more about her. I need to know about this woman.
You know, I'm so upset because she passed away. And
oh, I'm sorry.
I am so, it's a lesson in her passing, it's a lesson to say, don't ever postpone or procrastinate any projects you want to do, which I do all the time because I always have a million projects I'm working on simultaneously. But I always wanted to make a short film about her.
Mm.
And it kills me that I never did.
Yeah.
Anyway, her name was Harriet Rose Katz, and she's kind of a New York, she was a New York icon in the party planning business. So you need to look her up because
I will.
Her business still exists, but she was quite the grande dame.
I love her. Well, I think that's the other thing about all these photos, whether they're your family or not, you look at them and you want to know more about each person. And like they are just like teeming with personality, and every single person, every single photograph, you're like, I need to spend time with this person. I need to absolutely like have a martini with this woman, or like have this, you know, man, presumably your father, make my next Thanksgiving turkey.
you can come over Thanksgiving.
Thank you. I will. What was the energy of your family being photographed all the time? I'm sure they're used to it, but how has their energy changed behind the lens, in front of the lens from when you first started doing it to now? Was there ever like a moment where they didn't like it or they felt tense? Have they loosened up over the years?
I think my mom is the hardest person for me to photograph. My grandparents were real characters and they weren't self-conscious, but with the camera, they were just who they were and they weren't really aware of it. And it was kind of fun for them. And it was, we had fun with the camera. And so it's hard because there are so many generations that I photographed. So the grandparents and that generation, it really was fun. It was harder to photograph my immediate family. And they were more conscious of it, more self-conscious. And especially during the Trump years, they would, you know, they trusted me, which is a big deal. And I do not take that lightly. But they would be worried and say, oh, are you making us look bad? Are you judging us? And so there was a self-consciousness that started in the past 4 or 5 years. But they really are. I mean, I'm used to being called annoying, and they're constantly yelling at me to put the camera down when it's like too much. I've crossed the line.
Right.
And
they've had it.
Yeah. But they are really generous with allowing me to document their lives.
Yeah. And I mean, there's also like to that point, because it spans so many years, there's like a really beautiful narrative arc of watching people grow up and watching people age and, you know, how they change. And I'm sure that you changed so much in those years. I feel like everything gets a little softer towards the end. And I'm sure that's like you growing up and also just like approaching things with a different, like it becomes less funny and more of like, I don't know what the word is, but there's something very tender about, especially towards the end of the book, the later photos.
Well, I mean, it is done with so much love, you know, there's so much, we have so much love in our family and for each other. And so I'm glad that that comes through even in the most difficult pictures.
At what point did you decide that this was going to be a book though? You know, given that like this is such a long project, I think most people, especially nowadays, we think of the creative process as like a 2 to 3 year thing, or there's just this constant pressure to put work out. at this clip that is relatively unsustainable, if I do say so myself. But this is such a long thing. You could have gone another 10 years, I imagine. So what was it about now that you felt like was the right time?
So I think that I realized that it was a book after Pop-Up. I spent the next year really looking through tens of thousands of pictures and kind of working out the narrative of the first 15 years that led us up to this moment. Like, what led us up to this very moment where we're at? So I spent about a year or two really thinking about that and writing and photographing. I kept photographing. And then I thought then, you know, it's funny because the publisher of the book was in the audience. So I think that it was
very... Did you know that at the time?
I did, because they published... Aperture published my first book, Testimony.
Okay.
So it was apparent that I wanted to work with them again because I trusted them. And they were really respectful of my time and the fact that I couldn't have... Like, I had to figure out when the right time was. So it took a couple of years. And in fact, we were meant to publish it the fall of 2020 at the election, during the election. And I had to postpone it because COVID just turned everything. It changed everything and kind of reopened up all the wounds that I spent, you know, the last 2 years trying to heal. And so I postponed the book, and it wasn't without, it was hard to make that decision because I know that it wasn't convenient for them, but they trusted in my gut that it was, you know, the project needed time to, I needed time to digest everything that was happening. And I'm never, it's never about just getting it out. It's about the quality of the work, and the quality is not, it's not about crunching or making a timeline. It's about letting the work, knowing when it's finished, and that could take a while.
Yeah. Wait, that's really interesting. So what changed in that year that you had that you sort of were like, okay, it's definitely not ready now, but a year later you were like, okay, I feel ready to sort of part with this. Did it expand? Did it contract? Did it change?
Well, right before the pandemic, I was at a place, and I write about this in the book. I was at a place where I was a kind of like a healing, accepting moment. And then the pandemic happened, and it's just everything just, like I said, it was just like opening up old wounds, and the tension and fighting got worse than it ever was. And the politics got more divisive. And so there was no, everything that I resolved just, I had no resolution anymore. It was like, wait, this is not okay. And I don't know when it's going to be. And I don't know when I'm going to be able to finish this because I don't know what's going to happen next.
What has been the response from your family in sort of retrospect? Because I imagine there's a lot of, not just memories from them and their loved ones, like, we're looking at it very objectively as the audience, and we're either looking at it from a technical aspect, like this is a beautiful photograph or an interesting person or the sort of political backstory, but this is their, these are their lives. This is sort of like you have curated this beautiful gift for them, this memory book of people that are probably no longer with us. Some people that have, you know, live elsewhere. I don't know. I feel like it's probably bringing up a lot of stuff for them, not just for you, but.
Oh yeah. It was very emotional. Before the book came out, you know, publicly, I sat with my family, all my family members, and while they read it, and I sat with them. And those were some really, really intense weeks. Those were really intense conversations. It took, I'm glad we had that time before to process it together. But I think we were all better for it because there were things that needed to be discussed. And I think that they understood me more and respected me more after they read it. I felt understood in a way that I had never felt I hadn't felt understood before.
That's incredible. I mean, that's truly like the best therapy that a person could ask for or that money could buy, I imagine.
It does feel like intense.
I'm like, should we all go do a photo book of our family and see what happens? Maybe we could be closer. Was well, there, there ever was, Oh, go ahead.
No, no. There was at the exhibition, I saw a father brought his son there. He was a 20-year-old boy. And they came over and they said, oh, are you the artist? And they said, thank you so much. We haven't been able to talk. And the 20-year-old was like, I have not, my father brought me here because I haven't talked to him. And this was our way. So it was just so moving that they used this work in order to open up their dialogue.
That's powerful.
From the tension that they've had from the past 4 years. And it was incredibly powerful.
That's beautiful. Have there been any photographs, or were there any photographs from the book or any pieces of text or anything you had written or shared with the world that anyone in your family was like, that's too far, or I'd really rather you not?
Yes.
you're like, and now is not the time that you're going to share that.
Yes. No. I mean, there's a couple of things. Well, first of all, the text messages were, I was very careful because those are private messages. And that I labored over which text messages were appropriate to share. And there was a photograph of my nephew, a portrait of my nephew in his bedroom, that I thought was one of the strongest pictures I've ever made, one of the strongest portraits I ever made. And it was him surrounded by all the Trump paraphernalia. It was actually in the pop-up show. But he asked me not to publish it in the book. And I was devastated and lost a lot of sleep because I had to respect that. And we compromised, and he allowed me to publish the room empty without him in it, so he wasn't identified.
Well, I feel like if you can create a full book of images and stories, and there's like an isolated thing, you are doing well. I feel like your family can not laugh at themselves, but like respect you and your art and your work, but also trust in your hands that you are telling a story and doing it in like a loving and beautiful, objective way. Honestly, they all look fabulous. I gotta say, like, nobody dresses like your family. It is, I read that your grandmother dressed your grandfather and he never said no to a thing that
it's
she
adorable.
Had picked out for him. But like, the zebra prints, the like, the colors, the open shirts, it is just, it is my Florida fantasy is really what it is.
I know. They really are my style icons.
We'll take a short break and be right back with the photographer Jillian Laub in just a moment. What is your hope for the book when people get it in their hands, like if it's gifted to them? Or I mean, I think sort of the story about the father and the son at your show feels like a part of that.
Well, I mean, I think that, and this was a teacher, one of my teachers in photography school said, you know, because when I was making, I'm like, how is anyone gonna, like, my family is so specific. I don't want, you know, I just kept questioning myself, like, what is the larger story here? And I feel like there is a larger story, which is why I made this book. It's not just about my family. And my teacher said, the more specific you get, the larger the message. And I, from the feedback that I've gotten, which is reassuring, is that there's kind of something for everyone in there, because it's like we all come from complicated families. Family, by definition, is complicated because there are humans. It's made up of humans. So, you know, some people have said that there are things in there that they think about but haven't said out loud. So it made them feel kind of heard or seen or less alone. And that, to me, is like there's nothing better than somebody kind of connecting to it in that way.
Yeah. I think, to be an artist and to have that sort of impact that the work exists beyond you is the greatest gift, I feel.
Yeah.
But real quick, I mean, I feel like this is a low-hanging fruit question, but I just got
to
know.
No.
So
yeah.
you, real quick, for anyone who's not familiar, Jillian has photographed people like Dolly Parton and Mary J. Blige, famously, and Annie Leibovitz as recently as a few weeks ago, I believe.
Yeah.
Has there been anybody you photographed where you felt like there was like an intimidation factor so high that it made it a challenge for you creatively?
Well, I mean, I'm nervous. I think the second you're not nervous going into a shoot is like, that's a bad sign. So I think I'm always nervous. And that's that kind of, I think that helps you. I think the Obamas, I was very, very nervous. I'm like, I have to do them justice. Like how I can't not do them justice. That's always the worries. Like I want to be able to do justice. And that mm-hmm. was most recently with Annie, the Obamas, it was hard because you had very little time.
Right.
But photographing Annie, I mean, come on, she's like a legend. I mean, she's a legend. So photographing her was the most intimidating because there's no one that knows, you know, is more conscious about photography. And she knew that. And I think she felt bad for me. she sympathized with me.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
And so that's when it was actually sweet. And it felt more like a collaboration. Like that was what was so incredible with Annie is like she really just has, above all else, she has such a respect and takes the creative process so seriously. So I think that she really, that came across with our shoot, which I'll tell you one story is that the picture that was used of her in front of her pond, I knew her pond was really, really, really important to her in Rhinebeck. And we spent the day at her property in Rhinebeck, and we get to the pond, and it's awful light, like just the worst light. And I thought I was maybe going to have an hour with Annie, but we had the whole day together, and this is the very last shot. And she said, oh, let me show you what it looks like in the morning. It's so gorgeous in the, you know, right at sunrise. So she shows me, she's like, I'm not showing off, but let me just show you this picture. It's so gorgeous. And she shows me this, like, beautiful picture on her iPhone. And it was like this mystical, you know, smoke, like mist coming off of the water. And it was just gorgeous. And it was like torture. So I'm like, okay, I'll never be able to get this.
Yeah, I can't
because
top that.
I can't top that. And she was like, okay, do you want to come back in the morning? And so she knew, I mean,
yeah,
it wasn't something that was convenient for her because it was, you know, yeah. And I woke up, she allowed me to, you know, come back at sunrise and make that picture because she knew that was going to, the light was going to be perfect then.
Yeah.
So
it's like very much like a talking shop thing. I think similarly, like when there's like a cooking for people energy where like people, it's like cooking for somebody who's really good at cooking.
Or right. It's cooking, the same
but you know
thing.
What? But it's actually great because there's like a trust and an understanding where you are actually, you've sort of fallen to a rhythm. And I bet that also the photos you took of her are so drastically different than her style that I felt like, you know, I don't know, there's probably some sort of like beautiful unspoken bond there between you now forever.
Yeah, I felt that way, which I'm really... Yeah, it was very special. But wait, I want to know who is the most intimidating for you to cook for.
Oh, gosh. The person who's most intimidating for me to cook for, gosh, I don't know. Anyone who's, I guess I'm cooking for the first time or like who knows about me in general, because I feel like ultimate pressure. And yeah. It's my worst nightmare to cook for somebody in real life and have them be like, this girl, you like this person's food? Like I had it in real life. It wasn't that good. So for me, it is always about like meeting expectations. And if the expectation is that I'm a professional and you're like going over to somebody's house for a potluck and you're like, someone's like, who made the dip? It's not that good. I'm like, oh, I made it, but I do this for a living. It sort of makes me feel like I sort of delegitimized. Unlike this podcast where I'm like, I'm not a professional podcast host. So, you know. If I am not a good interviewer, I at least can fall back on my cooking.
I love it. I love it.
Jillian, thank you so, so much for joining me on my foray into podcast co-hosting.
I love talking to you.
Thank you again so much to Jillian Laub. Her book is called Family Matters, and her exhibit of the same name is at the ICP in New York through January 10th. We'll show some of the photos Jillian and I talked about on Katie's website, katiekirk.com. And that's it for me on this microphone and in your ears, but there's plenty more of me to go around. You can subscribe to my newsletter, find my cookbooks or home movies by going to my website, alisoneroman.com. Thank you so much for listening. And of course, thank you so much for having me, Katie.
Wasn't she great, everyone? By the way, her newsletter and home movies are a must, whether you're knee-deep in the holidays or you're just looking for something delicious to make on your own. So go find her if you haven't already. And next week, while I'm getting ready to release all the highlights from my whirlwind book tour, my good friend Brian Goldsmith is taking over the pod. He's a political consultant, recovering journalist, and my former podcasting co-host. He's going to be looking into his crystal ball, and it's very clear, people, to tell us what the future holds in politics. It's everything you'll need to know next Thursday on Next Question. Next Question with Katie Couric is a production of iHeartMedia and Katie Couric Media. The executive producers are me, Katie Couric, and Courtney Litz. The supervising producer is Lauren Hansen. Associate producers, Derek Clements, Adriana Fazio, and Emily Pinto. The show is edited and mixed by Derek Clements. For more information about today's episode or to sign up for my morning newsletter, Wake Up Call, go to katiecouric.com. You can also find me at Katie Couric on Instagram and all my social media channels. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.